Well, good evening.
Good evening.
We looks like we're down in number. We probably have some traveling, but we've got Bill and Kathy with us. We're glad for that. I have unfortunately, due to travel with work, have been gone the last couple weeks and have missed out on that study. But for those of us who are have either not been here or are guests, we are looking at the qualifications of bishops and deacons. And as part of that study, we've broken that down over the course of Wednesday nights, and we're looking at each of us are taking a little bit different section. And I had been assigned the topic of being sober-minded and not self-willed. And if we turn in 1 Timothy, where we would see that list of qualifications, and I know we've read this probably every single time, and I'm not going to read them all, but in the second verse there of 1 Timothy chapter 3, it says, "A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, and able to teach." Now, in this listing here, we don't see the same thing that we see over in Titus. Titus chapter 1, and let's see here, verses 5 and 6. "For this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking, and appoint elders in every city as I command you. If a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination, for a bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money." And that goes on. So those would be the two items, again, that I'm going to look at tonight, and that is being sober-minded and not being self-willed. I think that we can deduce that as Christians, this is conduct that we would all want to have, and that is that we would want to be sober-minded and that we would not want to be self-willed. If we, just to define sober-minded, so before I get into what I have down, how would we define sober-minded? Just give me some descriptions that come to your mind of somebody that's sober-minded.
The NIV uses the term self-control.
Okay, good. That's a good one. That I think that helps us to kind of understand it a little bit.
Someone that's being the opposite of a frivolous person.
Okay. All right. Opposite of someone that's frivolous.
One of the last week, my topic was not given to wine.
Okay.
And one of the words from the King James used the word vigilant in some of those places. And I think that would probably be a good synonym for sober-minded, vigilant in your thoughts.
Okay, that's good. We're going to get into that. I have that down for sure. Anyone else? Well, the Greek word, which I don't do a lot of in the Greek, but it's sophroneo, if I'm saying it right. And when that is defined as that word, it means to be sane or in one's right mind. Pretty simple. To be sane and in one's right mind. Now, I know that when we're talking about sober-minded, we may not think immediately of being sober, sobriety. Think that not one with alcohol. But back to your point, Eric, and it sounds like you got into part of that, I feel like we have to ask this question, and that is it possible to be sober-minded if you're not sober? I don't think so. And so as I was looking at this and thinking a little bit about it, I mean, you know, when we think of someone that's not sober, we think of someone that is either drunk or one that's not sane, or they're not in the right mind, or they're fuzzy. They're thinking very fuzzy. They're not clear-headed. So quite the opposite. And I think that's important. You know, as Christians, I mean, we know to not be given to much wine, but it's probably very difficult to be sober-minded if you're not sober. Matter of fact, probably impossible. So I was thinking, and I just kind of made a small list of things I was thinking, but I was thinking about somebody that acts discreetly, someone that uses sound judgment, moderation, someone that's self-disciplined, and of course that self-willed piece will come in here in a little bit. If you look, part of that sophroneo word is sophron in the Greek, And that's specifically used, if we go to Titus 2, if someone's there, I'll get there. Titus 2, verse 2, it says that the older men be sober. That's that sober, that sophrono, or sophron, is to be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, love, and patience. And then if we go on to Titus 2, 5, it says to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. So there it's translated discreet. And so that's another way of looking at it. Okay, and I had down other versions translate sober-minded, just as Bill brought up, as self-controlled. The ESV and NIV and NRSV say might list it also as sensible. So that kind of gives you another way of looking at that. Self-controlled or sensible is what we're talking about.
Another thing might be having the ability to curb your desires and the impulses that we have,
okay,
that all of us have.
Sure.
Mature in that, being able to control those.
Okay.
Not completely.
Right.
You know, I mean, none of this is, it's all...
Sure. But isn't that what we're striving towards?
We're all striving
to do that. Yep. Okay. Good. Yeah, that's that control piece. It's the bridling piece. It's the holding back. It's being able to withstand maybe some of those thoughts or actions that we may have had as we're youthful or as we're young in the faith. Okay, so good point. You know, we all have different passions, but it's, and I, Dwayne, you're stealing my next bullets, but you know, it's controlling those passions. It's controlling, it's exercising self-discipline. That's exactly what I feel like you're trying to say. Will someone turn to 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8? Let's read here. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. Let's get into why we should be.
Be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour.
Okay, so why would we be sober and vigilant? Because of the roaring lion. And who's the roaring lion? Obviously, Satan. Okay. So, you know, we for sure realize that he's out there waiting to devour us. And this being sober-minded causes us to constantly be aware of the devil that is waiting to take us over. Will someone turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 6 and read that? If you have any comments, feel free, of course.
Therefore, let us not sleep as you others, but let us watch and be sober.
Okay. So, does this literally, Kevin, mean to not sleep? No. So, what is it really telling us here? If it's not telling us to literally not sleep, what is it? What is it reminding us to do?
Be aware and awake and prepared.
Okay. Be aware, be awake, be prepared, that preparedness, that's good. So, watching, being watchful, being sober, being, as Eric said, vigilant. I had that vigilant word throughout the whole way. It was hard for me to not use that word. And when you think of vigilant, I think of being watchful. Just being on guard, being ready. And really, when you get into being sober-minded and being and not self-willed, if you really look, it's not mentioned in the Bible very often. Rarely, as a matter of fact. But other words are watchful, vigilant, sober-minded, some of those things. But when we get into the New Testament, watch is used over and over and over, and I think that's a word we can cling to that I think makes a lot of sense. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 24. We're going to stay in Matthew for a few verses here, but Matthew chapter 24, verse 42 and 43 tells us, "Watch therefore, for you do not know what your hour..." Let me start over. "Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into." This is that watch piece. And again, what are we watching for? Well, we're going to see multiple things, but we're watchful that we're prepared for when the Lord comes. We're watchful and vigilant for Satan. Matthew, and we're going to just stay here in Matthew for a couple more verses. Matthew chapter 25, verse 13. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. Okay? And in Matthew chapter 26, verses 40 and 41, it says, Then he came to the disciples and found them asleep and said to Peter, What, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. So, when I think about these qualifications that we're talking about, I'm thinking about individuals, I'm thinking about us exercising this careful circumspection. This one who is always looking out for danger, this one that is always keenly aware that Satan is out there ready to devour us. And I just think it's a way for us to be thinking about being put on guard. We're going to get into it in a little bit about girding our minds. And so, again, being on guard, being watchful.
It's amazing how so many of these words just tie together. This is the third Greek word or so that we're looking at.
Yeah.
Different Greek word, but it has this
same meaning.
Same idea, maybe just a little bit this way, mm-hmm. that way, but it's all right in there. About perception and watching and being awake,
mm-hmm.
and attentive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've already. You just keep naming words.
Almost all. Yeah. So it's very hard because a lot of these words work, and I think if we think of it in those terms, then it helps us. Because I don't know that when I think of sober minded, that makes me think about some of the things we're talking about. So I think some of these other words are words we use more frequently and they make more sense. I want to go back to this roaring lion piece, though. I came across something I hadn't given a whole lot of thought about. But we realize, I think all of us realize, we've studied it, we know Satan is capable of a lot. And when I think of a roaring lion, what comes to your mind? I always think of a PBS special or something and how they hunt. And you think about what they do and that stalking and how they just chase down whatever it is they want and devour them. And they look to pick off the single one, or they look to, you know, separate one from the herd or whatever. Just that whole process. And I get that in my mind. And if we go back to Revelation chapter 12 and verse 12, it tells us here, Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time. Tells us a little bit about Satan, doesn't it? You know, he realizes that his time on earth is short. You know, I always say that, you know, misery, or the saying is misery loves company. I think he's well aware of his destiny, and he realizes that he doesn't have long. He works hard to try to pull as many with him. And, you know, you get this picture here. It says, having great wrath. Well, why does he have great wrath? Well, it tells us, because he has a short time. It's kind of a circular problem when you think about what a sad existence, but so good at sucking others into this.
You have more on the line.
No, not on the line. Go ahead.
I've heard the story. The fact is that and I've never been after. I haven't been laying on the line. Yep. I don't want to be around.
Not that
but
close.
That most of the roaring comes from the old toothless lines. Hmm. The old mature lines will be back in the, just kind of back in the brush there. And they will do this roaring. And then for the young ones that are
bring them in the hunt.
This, he has a way of when he roars, and it kind of
signifies or signals to others.
Maybe pushes them toward the young ones. The young ones is the one that will come out and devour them.
Mm. Okay. All right. Well, and who's capable of devouring? Those young, agile, mm-hmm. in good shape.
So, you know, so the devil's back there roaring.
Luring.
Lurking,
yeah.
And pushing us toward the ones that are really going to
cause us grief.
They're going to do us in.
Good. That's a good
and so you really have
parallel.
You have to be careful because we can be fools. See, that kind of fools you. When you hear a big roar, I'm going to run the other direction.
Well, so I'm glad you mentioned that. So let's read 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14, the exact opposite of this roaring lion that we're talking about. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14 says, And no wonder, For Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Whoa, what a difference. You've got this roaring lion that we think of as, you know, like say, very aggressive and out maybe, out in front. But then someone that can transform. So when you think of somebody that can transform themselves as an angel of light, what do you get the picture of? Someone that can be deceptive, one that can appear that everything's fine. You know, very deceiving.
Isn't that what stuns an animal if you're hunting and it's illegal to use lights in those
at night?
Because they'll just stand there like there.
Yeah.
Keep moving.
Yeah. Freezes them up. Is that maybe what happens to us sometimes? Maybe we're stunned by this.
Wrong place, the light shines.
Yep.
Okay. I think this passage is generally talking about false religions.
Right.
Those who deceive others in the name of good. And
but who's at the head of that?
To be righteous and lead people astray.
Yeah. And who's kind of at the fulcrum there?
Well,
Satan. Yeah, but you're right. Yep. Those who deceive. Okay. So those are the reasons we need to be sober-minded. Those are the reasons that we have to be vigilant. We have to be watchful. 2 Timothy, will somebody turn there? 2 Timothy 4, verse 5. Read that.
But you be watchful in all things, and your afflictions do the work of evangelists, fulfill your ministry.
Okay. Watchful in all things. What would we be watchful for? I mean, we've listed a few, but what else would we be watchful for? How about for ourselves? What are we specifically watchful for? That we don't sin, maybe that we don't err, that we don't put ourselves in spots we shouldn't be in. We don't find ourselves hanging around people we shouldn't be with. Watchful to
watch for those underlying feelings and emotions and impulses that we have. And it kind of comes right back to that same idea.
Okay.
I think a sober-minded person, one of the reasons that's listed as a qualification is to understand what's at stake in the gravity of the situation.
Right.
And it really is life or eternal death or eternal life. And you sure wouldn't want a leader of the church to not understand that,
right.
To not be watchful and not be alert and not have experience, because you know there really is a jungle out there.
Right.
That's a lion scenario.
Yeah.
So they have to, they have to be serious.
Okay. Good. And then, and kind of going along with that, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13 says, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, and be strong. And you've kind of, just what you said, Mike, I mean, it's going to take, you think of someone that's a little bit more of a veteran. You think of someone that maybe doesn't have that youthful race into things and not maybe thinking things through or not being completely vigilant. Maybe you think you are, but you're not really circumspectly looking, taking it all in. And but it tells us, reminds us there to watch. And why are you watching? Well, all those reasons we just talked about. To stand in your faith and then it says be brave and be strong.
The story that comes to my mind, I don't know if I have this right. Gideonites, let's see, the ones that acted like they came from a long way.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know,
their clothing was all
they took them in, and they didn't. They were. I think their main problem was they didn't consult with God. Didn't pray to God. They just kind of fell into it.
When they came upon them? You're saying why were they able to be fooled or what?
Okay. I'm just saying that they weren't
vigilant, or
very
they
vigilant.
Yeah.
You know about that scenario. And,
well, they were tricked.
Yeah,
clearly,
got tricked. And, probably, if they would have consulted with God, He would have not allowed that to happen.
Okay, good. If you'll go to 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13, I think this is an important part of this, being sober. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13 says, "Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you into the revelation of Jesus Christ." Well, how do you gird up the loins of your mind? Well, let's start here. When they were told to gird up their loins, what were they doing?
They pull up their loose clothing.
Okay.
So they could be able to be active, like to fight.
Okay, to fight, to run, to do whatever. And, you know, we have a picture. I mean, we don't see people dressed like this per se today, but you get the picture of this long flowing garment that'd be in your way. And can you imagine running? I mean, you know, if we don't feel like we've got, you know, good lightweight shoes and perfect clothing and nothing restricting us, well, how could I run? Well, okay, so they were to gird up their loins. They were to be ready, cinch things down, get it out of the way, tie it up. So when you think about girding up the loins of your mind, what are we talking about here? Preparation. Get prepared. Be on the lookout. Stand ready. Study. Read. Be prepared. And so I think that's a pretty good visual for us, is that, you know, if we plan to be prepared for all these things that we're supposed to be watchful for, how is she going to do that? Are you going to be fuzzy-minded? Are you going to be sober-minded? Are you going to be ready? No, you wouldn't be. Yeah, Kevin.
Ephesians 6, when we gird up our waist, it is with truth. So girding up our mind also.
Yeah.
One aspect is truth.
Yeah. Good.
And you know, this is very important. I don't care what kind of where you're a leader at. You better be prepared. You better be thinking ahead. You better be thinking of all different situations and having to try to do two or three things at one time. So it really takes
how well is it working?
I mean, you've got to pull it in.
All right.
And
how does being reactive work for a leader? If all you do is just react to everything that happens, it's a train wreck. It's not good. Yeah. Okay. Good. So, thinking through how are you going to respond? If you're sober minded, you've thought about how you're going to respond to people. You've thought about how you're going to respond or react or proactively act towards something that comes up. You know if you're going to get put on the spot about something that you believe. How are you going to respond to that? We've all been put in spots we maybe wouldn't want to be in. Well, were you prepared for that or were you not? Were you sober-minded? Did you step back and take the time to think through that? Or did you just react, respond, and it was bad? And we've all done it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come out as well.
Of course, one thing to help to gird up our mind is prayer. Big thing.
Prayerful.
Prayer. Pray about it. Ask for wisdom.
Yep.
Ask for guidance.
Good.
Ask for understanding. Study it and open the Bible. I mean, that's part of the preparation.
Good. Okay. So we have about 15 minutes left, so I'm going to move into self-will. Did anyone have anything else about sober-minded before we move on?
Well, the word self-control has a lot to do with how you use your tongue, too.
Oh, yeah.
Not flying off and get to the point, you know, Proverbs 13:3 says, "He who guards his lips guards his life, and he who speaks rashly will come to ruin." Try to be self-controlled in the way you control your tongue whenever the situation occurs.
Yep. Good. Okay. Very good. Any other comments? All right. So, not self-willed. The qualification is to not be self-willed. So if you are self-willed, what does that mean?
You're going to pretty much follow what you want to do.
Sure.
Your impulse.
Yeah. Whatever's important to you, that's what you're going to do. Okay. So the Greek word here is authades, self-pleasing, self-willed, or arrogant. Okay. That's what we're talking about. If we're talking about self-will, we're talking about someone that's self-pleasing, self-willed, or they're very arrogant. And to not be self-willed, if we look in 2 Peter 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 10, it says, "And especially those who walk according to the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise authority. They are presumptuous, self-willed, they are not afraid to speak evil of the dignitaries." This verse is perfect. I mean, this explains the exact thing that we're talking about here. And that word, that authetes that I was talking about, that is the word here that describes this self-willed. This is a person that walks according to the flesh, which we've all, before we turned to Christ, walked according to the flesh. And uncleanliness. This is a person that despises authority. They don't want to be told what to do. I mean, that's the opposite of what this person is. But they're very presumptuous. They're self-willed, and they're not afraid to speak evil of, it says dignitaries, of anyone, really. They're quick to speak bad about other people and put others down because, well, I'm perfect, right? Go ahead, Mike.
It looks to me like the English translation here is maybe a little misleading from the Greek, because we, we're all supposed to have some sort of self-will.
Sure.
Or drive.
Confidence, yeah.
Zeal.
Yeah.
And desire to do what's right, and I don't think you can really be a Christian if you don't have that, because we all have to make those choices mm-hmm. on our own to really succeed, but...
It's a fine line. Arrogance, arrogance probably, there's probably not much of a place for us as Christians to be arrogant when we think of that word.
And or overbearing, maybe, that might be...
Another good word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, it's a fine line.
With someone, an elder or a deacon who was this way.
You're
talking about a group of people appointing someone.
Yeah. Well, I think to your point and Mike's point, when you think of someone that only is in it for them, the self-will, that all I look about is myself, that's all I care about, would they make a good elder or deacon? Of course not. I mean, there's no way that an arrogant person that cares about themselves and themselves, I mean, that's the exact opposite of what needs to be. So,
maybe you've already used the word selfish. The word selfish, that they're...
I think so. Be part of it. I think this other thing, this... despising authority. I think that's a pretty important thing. I've always said that to be a good leader, you also need to be a good follower. Think about it. Our leaders of the church are following who? Christ. Well, if you can't follow Christ, how in the world do you think you're going to be a good leader of those in the church? You couldn't be. I think we have some leaders that don't not in the church. I'm just saying, I think our world has some people that are leaders that aren't good followers and wouldn't want to be a good follower of anyone, because they're proud, they're self-willed, they're haughty, I'm as good as it is, and I'm only going to, answer myself. And we've seen people like that. So the person that's not self-willed is someone that maybe doesn't do things according to their own will. They're following Christ. They're following their local elders. They're following the will of God. They're not following their own will. I kind of get the feeling of someone that's stubborn. Just a stubborn person. I get the feeling that if you're self-willed, you're probably fairly stubborn. Okay? Anyone else have any thoughts about before we just kind of get into this a little bit? And I don't have a ton on self-will, but...
I just kind of had a thought of what if you had a leader who had no determination, no courage, and simply said, well, I'll just do what everybody else wants to do, and had no self-will.
Right, right.
Or no...
no ability to follow Christ, yeah.
Or whatever. That... would be one extreme, and the other extreme,
right.
Like I said, well, go with a conceited person,
right.
Who thought that everything they think is right,
right.
And they couldn't be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a time. I think that's a good point. There's definitely a time to consider the thoughts of the group you're leading, but there's a time where you know what's right and you have to do what's right, regardless of maybe what others are thinking or want to do. You know, what Christ tells us, what the Bible leads us, would for sure be, you know, what we'd be looking to first make that decision. I think that's a good point. Yeah, Bill.
I think it's self-directed person being the next person who, let's say you're in a group of people.
Yep.
And everybody, you know, there's not just one particular way to do what you
sure.
do.
Yep.
But you have to have your way. It's got to be done your way, or it shouldn't be done. In other words, a self-willed person will not listen to other people's ideas.
Right.
In other words, on how to accomplish, you know, there's a lot of times there's issues and things that you can accomplish more than one way.
Oh, yeah.
A self-willed person doesn't want to listen to anybody else's ideas or thinking on something. They just, you know, that's the way I think of self-willed.
Mm-hmm.
Not willing to listen to others.
I had a principal one time, and I had a lot of principals, and some of them were good and not good. But this one principal, when you went to her, you didn't know, you didn't think at all that you were going to get your way. But I always knew I was her.
Right.
And that's really important.
Yeah.
You really hear what the other person is saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether she would do it or not, I just don't. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And isn't it frustrating to be around people, though, that you know it's their way or the highway? Always. That's a frustrating feeling. We've all had a boss or a leader or a principal or a superintendent that it's always their way. And you kind of, there's a law that...
reverse psychology.
Yeah. That's fine. There's a law, the law of the lid, and it talks about you'll only jump so high and so many times and keep hitting your head before you just stop jumping. And that's kind of when you're around people that are self-willed or leaders of... You finally just, why would I come up with a good idea? Why would I take? Because you're not going to listen. You don't care. That's a bad situation to be in. How hard do you want to work for someone that's that way?
Yeah, this word self-willed has the word autos.
Altos? Okay.
Self.
Uh huh. Yeah. So it's just yeah, yeah. And that's all you're worried about. Number one. That's right. That's right.
The only one you care about.
That's right. So this 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 10, of course we just read verse 10, but then it goes on to say, whereas angels, who are greater in power and might, do not bring a reviling accusation against them before the Lord, but these, talking about who we're talking about, like natural brute beasts, made to be caught and destroyed, speak evil of the things they do not understand, and will utterly perish in their own corruption. These are people like, what's it say there? Like natural brute beasts. All right. Very interesting. This is basically describing, because you go back into verse 10, those who are walking according to the flesh. We're talking about those who are walking in lust and uncleanliness and despise authority. Well, we've just defined who that is. They're very presumptuous. They're self-willed. Okay. This is the person we're talking about. And what ends up happening to them? Well, it goes on. It's not a very good thing. So we just have a few minutes left. What I wanted to do to kind of finish things up, I think it's good for us to kind of see these people for who they are. So if we were actually to think about some biblical characters that were sober-minded and not self-willed, let's say not self-willed for now, who might we list? And if you think of who it is, maybe give me just a one sentence on why. Sure.
And your leaders are your best servants.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. And was he sober-minded? Was he quick to... Was he always ready to get the answers?
And he would tell people if he's ready to, in love,
yeah.
make a correction,
yeah.
but not put them down
yeah.
so bad that they didn't want to be seen again.
Yeah.
Well, he said more than one place, he came to do the will of his Father.
Yeah.
In the garden, he prayed, not my will,
but your will be done. Yeah. Good.
There may be several that just like Philip, in Ethiopia, when God told him there was a need there, he was ready to go.
Okay, that's good. Being right, yeah.
not to throw us off the subject, but it's interesting when we think of Peter. And we know Peter was an elder, mm-hmm. but when you think of Peter, we think of somebody being circumspect and kind of being, uh-huh. so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, here was an example of a guy who at times in his life didn't always show some of those mm-hmm. qualities. I mean, obviously he matured into a situation where
sure.
he was apostle and an elder and certainly qualified.
Well, okay, so that's a great point. So let's talk about that for a second, because I think it's important. Do leaders make mistakes? The answer is yes. Does Christ tell us that we will all sin and fall short? I mean, hopefully, to your point, as Peter matured and got into those positions, got better. But I think it's important for us to realize that, and some of us in various ways in our life have been leaders and have made a mistake. And maybe, you know, I mean, all these people that I've listed, you know, we could say that David, you know, did he have faults? Of course. But was he someone that, you know, overcame? Was he someone that at times was, you know, very sober-minded?
Sometimes leaders might make more mistakes than others because they have to take more chances. They
they're
have
put out there.
Put in more situations
right.
to make decisions. And, I worked with a guy one time and he said, you don't win races with Shetland ponies, you win with thoroughbreds, and you have to treat them differently. So people all have to be handled a little differently.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
So
good.
Do is read 2 Peter when Peter was an old man right before his death came on, and just read that. This is the first part, the first chapter. He talks about adding to your diligence faith.
Yeah. Long suffering,
faith,
peace,
virtue, knowledge, and the knowledge self and growth.
Good. That's good. I had Joseph down. Look what his brothers did to him. Sold him into slavery. But in spite of all those things that had happened to him, what did he do? He maintained his integrity. Still lived a solid life, one that was a good example to us. I think of him. You know, Timothy, I was thinking about Timothy as he assisted Paul when he was young. And he didn't allow his youth to be an excuse or something that put him, you know, in a bad spot. But he served Paul, you know, all the way to the end, and he served him well. There's others. I mean, we could go on. So we'll just wrap up as we've got the kids coming up. I think these two qualifications are super important, and it's interesting. You know, as Dwayne mentioned earlier, I think. As you try to put these in words that maybe we use today or better descriptive words, you think of people that are temperate, that are vigilant, as Eric has mentioned, people that are very consistent with good behavior. Consistency. You know, when I think of anybody could be sober-minded for a day or for a month or for a year, or they might find themselves not being self-willed for a span of time, but how good are you at being consistent in these areas? You know, when you think of pillars of the church, whether modern day or people we read in the Bible, they're consistent with all of these things. You know, they may have a setback or they may have had it, but they're very consistent about being sober-minded. Their whole walk is of sober-minded, and you find that the things they do are not self-willed. And I think that's really important. So if there's something I could close with tonight, it would just be to remind us that we can't blow from place to place, and we can't be influenced from person to person or from situation to situation. When you think of good leaders and you think of someone that you want in a position of authority, you think of someone that's consistent. You're steady Eddie, the person that hardly anything really rocks them. Anything really doesn't beset them. They stay consistent in their decisions and their willingness to serve the Lord and their willingness to press on and do all the right things.
For a flip side of this, the character in 3 John, Diotrephes, he seems to me like the type that would be self-willed.
Yeah, that's good. Any other comments? We've just got a minute or two left.